You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and he says what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we discuss Daniel Bryan, the Wyatt family, Bully Ray, Quentin Jackson, TNA's pay-per-views, and much more. My name is David, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host, Alex. How are things going, bud?
Things are going very, very well, David. I haven't talked to you in a while. What's going on?
Not too much. It's an exciting time of year. We just had SummerSlam, and of course, with college football and pro football just around the corner, along with the baseball playoffs, this is one of my favorite times of the year. How about you?
Yeah, it's going into the holiday season, and then you have the beginning of a lot of big sporting events. Also, in a couple of months, the NBA season will be starting back up. So this is definitely my favorite time for sports up into the new year. And then you get the holidays, you get time off work, time with family. Certainly the end of the year certainly has a lot of capstones before we hit the beginning of next year.
Yeah, you know, I'm excited about college football. Of course, my Tar Heels tonight got waxed by South Carolina, so I guess I'm looking forward to college basketball season now.
Absolutely, and college basketball season with a lot of those up-and-coming prospects, Julius Randle, Jabari Parker, and Andrew Wiggins, it'll definitely should provide for some excitement. They're calling this year's draft class one of the best ones in recent memory, so...
Well, what have you been up to? Now, you were out competing in some MMA events, right? Well, what have you been doing? Because this was a big couple weeks for you.
Well, okay, so July 4th weekend was UFC Fan Expo, and I think I made the announcement on the show that I was going to compete in Grappler's Quest. So mixed martial arts, the word mixed is the important part of it because you mix striking, grappling, and I was just doing the grappling, and so I started training jiu-jitsu this year, and so I started competing in grappling tournaments where I can perform, execute my jiu-jitsu moves, and so on July 4th, I competed against 8 people, and I won third, got beat one time, beat 2 guys, so I got third in my first ever tournament at Grappler's Quest, UFC Fan Expo weekend, and I got another tournament coming up in a couple weeks, Naga in Sacramento, and then at the end of the year, the same night that George St. Pierre defends his 170-pound title against Johnny Hendricks, I'll be there for that fight, but earlier in the day, I'm actually going to compete in another Grappler's Quest, hopefully taking home a medal that day, too, if not having a good performance. So submission grappling I've kind of fallen head into this year. So
I did not realize that you were going to keep competing. I knew that you were going out to Vegas, but this is exciting news that this is something you're going to be staying involved with.
Hey, absolutely. It's kind of interesting because, I mean, it was something on my bucket list for a couple of years, right? Someone asked me the other day at work, like, did I have a bucket list? And I can't really say I do. I live a goal-oriented life. I don't really have a bucket list per se. But this was something that if I did have a bucket list, was definitely at the top, is to compete at a tournament like this. And then once you kind of get the bug, I also did professional wrestling for a year, like I've said a couple times on the show. And you enjoy going out in front of all the people and competing, and this is kind of like because professional wrestling was my first love and passion, right? I mean, I became a pro wrestling fan at the age of 3 or 4, and my love of MMA grew out of professional wrestling from seeing Dan Severn and Ken Shamrock in the WWF. So this is an extension of my love of professional wrestling. So, the competition aspect's definitely neat, and it kind of makes what you do in the gym that much more important, right? Because if you're not putting everything across in the gym when you go out there and compete, you get waxed up. So it kind of, benefits your training in the gym.
Well, I've known you now about 3-4 years. You know, we've become good friends, and I'm just really proud of you. I think anytime someone, has something on their bucket list or a dream or a goal and they start to work towards it, I'm very proud of them. So congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I suggest anyone, no matter what the age is, just find something you can kind of throw yourself into. We discuss pro wrestling every week, and we discuss things on the internet from time to time, and get outside sometimes and find a hobby outside of all this that interests you and pursue it, right? And it kind of makes you a complete person, in my opinion. So
Alex, if someone wanted to do what you're doing, what's the first step? Where would they go? Is there a website? How would someone even get started doing this?
Well, you know, just like a good professional wrestling school, you kind of want to do your research around town, because now that jiu-jitsu has kind of taken over a lot of places with the influx of MMA, just do your research. And in that area specifically, where you have the D.C. area, there's a lot of good jiu-jitsu schools. And I'm in Fernley, Nevada, which is a rural town outside Reno. And there's a good jiu-jitsu school here. And just do your research and find a good, solid jiu-jitsu school where you'll get some good training and maybe stop in. A good school will let you try it out before you pay, right? A bad school wants you to pay first before you try it out. And just do your research, right? I mean, if you go to a gym and they have a world champion, for example, in San Diego, you find that where, you know, Andre Galval has a school and the Mendez brothers have a school, or, you know, so-and-so UFC fighter trains at this school, then more than likely it's a good school, right? So just kind of do your research and look around, and then, I would avoid signing long contracts too, if at all possible, because you never know what's going to happen. You might not like it, whatever. If the school has month-to-month, I'd prefer that. And then, just kind of get into it, right? But it doesn't have to be jiu-jitsu. You know, striking's real fun. My wife likes striking. So, just do something, right?
No, I appreciate that. And again, I'm real proud of you, and I enjoy talking with you. You know, I can really sense the passion in your voice. And so when's your next tournament?
September 14th, Sacramento, California. The North American Grappling Association, or NAGA as we just call it, they're putting on a tournament in Sacramento, and they try to theme the tournament, so this one's like the California Open or something. But essentially, it's just going to be the guys from the Northern California, Northern Nevada, you know, probably the Portland area coming down, Pacific Northwest, I guess, and coming to this tournament, and it's going to be the same night as Canelo Alvarez, Floyd Mayweather, which is interesting, because after the tournament, I'm going to have to find a way to watch that boxing fight. But yeah, so, it's going to be a bunch of guys from this area, as compared to the UFC Fan Expo, for example, where a guy on my team, when he was grappling, he went against a guy from Australia. So the Grappler's Quest in Las Vegas, because the UFC is pulling in so many fans for that 4th of July weekend, you're more likely to face someone from across the country, even possibly internationally. For example, like I said, the guys from Australia came in. There was contingents from all over the country and all over the world. But in this NAGA, I expect it to be a heavy West, Pacific Northwest kind of people in the tournament. And so it'll be interesting to kind of test out where you're at, right? Because, I mean, you could crush everyone in the gym, but, you go out and you compete and you might suck, right? So, it's not, it's not like you have to do it, but it's just something a little bit extra, right? You know, I mean, you can go to the driving range and you can hit golf balls all day, but to play on the course, right, it's something different challenge. So,
no question. Well, but this has become quite a commitment for you, because you're going to Sacramento, you're going to Las Vegas. I mean, I know you're out on the West Coast, but it's still become a family commitment.
You know, what's interesting as well is professional wrestling. When you had an opportunity to sit in on a seminar, like, for example, the current TNA wrestler, Manic, I had the opportunity to train a couple of times with him, being TJ Perkins. And it's certainly interesting, because Manic, or TJ Perkins, can tell you perspective from a time when he was 19 years old and he wrestled for New Japan Wrestling, the youngest American to ever do so. He can tell you perspective of when he went down to Mexico and wrestled as Puma. And then at the time, he can tell me perspective from different things he learned from wrestling for TNA. And jiu-jitsu is kind of the same way, striking or anything, really. I mean, for example, I can go to a school and, I can train with so-and-so world champion or so-and-so guy who did this, and they can offer different perspective, because the more of a world traveler you are, the more perspective, the more precise details you understand about each of the movements. And, I have this trainer, one of the guys that trains here in Reno, he's a brown belt. And one of the things he always says is, like, I know how to punch like Mike Tyson, but there's a lot of little details Mike Tyson knows that I don't know. And the way he does it, that makes it a lot more effective than when I do it, right? So, you want to be hungry for knowledge. So, I step outside my own gym a lot. I try to go to different gyms, try to train with different people. And whenever there's a seminar in town of a big-name black belt, you want to try to attend that so you can get as much knowledge as possible. This has turned into an interview for me. This is a professional wrestling show, I promise. But, yeah, it's certainly, yes, it's something I certainly enjoy, and I started studying the jiu-jitsu world a lot more for a lot more study because, you know, even though I was a big fan of MMA, recently we saw Hodger Gracie get cut from the UFC because even though he's the most successful jiu-jitsu player ever, 10-time world jiu-jitsu champion, it didn't really translate as well to MMA, right? I mean, he got a couple of submissions at Strikeforce shows, but once he got to the big show, the UFC, and fought Tim Kennedy, it was a struggle. Also, when he fought Muhammad Lawal at Strikeforce, it was a struggle. So a lot of the higher-level guys were able to stop his jiu-jitsu because they had strikes, they had other tools to utilize, but straight jiu-jitsu, Hodger Gracie is one of the best that's ever done it, right? So it's, you know, it's the mixed martial arts, but this is a separation of the arts, right? It's just jiu-jitsu. So it's certainly interesting. So yeah, I certainly enjoy it, yeah.
Well, anyone who reads OWW knows that you write the Punch in the Face column, which is MMA focused. They can, you know, hear your passion. That's one of my favorite columns to read. So, again, thank you for contributing to that. And we do have a lot of great wrestling to discuss on today's show. Should we get started?
Let's ring the bell.
World Wrestling Entertainment. Daniel Bryan realized his dream at SummerSlam when he defeated John Cena for the WWE Championship. Triple H and Randy Orton guaranteed, however, that his title reign wouldn't last very long, as they stole the title from him moments later. Now Bryan is involved in a battle against the establishment. Alex, was this the right way to handle Daniel Bryan?
You know, what's interesting is that, like, I didn't really see as much of the backlash on my social media feeds as much as I read people reacting to the backlash from this finish, right? I thought the finish was completely reasonable, and I look forward to see where it's going to go in the future, right? It's interesting that, you know, this is like the storyline that is kind of like built within the fans' heads, right? Mm-hmm. Daniel Bryan is looked at as this anti-establishment guy, right, because he's short. But what's interesting is that Daniel Bryan had a lot easier path to WWE than a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Daniel Bryan was trained by Shawn Michaels originally in a class that included Brian Kendrick and Lance Cade and all those, and Shooter Schultz. And all those guys were given developmental deals really early in their career. Daniel Bryan was also afforded the opportunity to go to Japan and wrestle for FMW very early in his career. And unfortunately, due to the invasion, he was cut because they had this influx of WCW wrestlers coming in. And Daniel Bryan was an easy target, being 5'9", 195 pounds. That's when he first went on the independent wrestling scene, and a promoter by the name of Jim Kettner at ECWA decided that he would have a really good match against Loki, and that was really the establishment of the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, as we know in the independent scene. And so it's interesting, he's seen as this big anti-establishment guy. I kind of think because he's short, right? And plus because he represented the indies for so many years.
Sure.
But here he is in World Wrestling Entertainment, and I can assure you, you know, he's extremely happy to be there. The couple times I was able to talk to him in independent wrestling shows before he was signed, you know, he always had that in the back of his head. Like, sure, I would love to get to WWE one day. A lot of guys say they wouldn't, but I think a lot of guys have afforded the opportunity. Sure, they would love to do it at the big stage. And here he is at SummerSlam. He gets the opportunity to beat John Cena, who is the de facto biggest superstar of this era. And then he loses to Randy Orton. But it's setting up a storyline for eventually, hopefully, Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, right? And Triple H is involved, Randy Orton's involved, the McMahons are involved. So, long story short, I think this is an awesome opportunity for Daniel Bryan to really display a different side of himself, right, David? Because the past year, he's been the bearded guy, he's been the yes guy, he's been the comedy guy. Now, hopefully, we see a little bit different side from Daniel Bryan. We see him engaging the Shield. He always has real rough, tough matches with the Shield. So it's going to be an opportunity for Daniel Bryan to show a different side. So, yes, thumbs up.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of play here. I mean, they know Cena was going to take time off to have his operation. I think they did a great job establishing Randy Orton with the briefcase at Money in the Bank and then having him now be the, you know, the champion with the corporation here, because it's a good chase for Daniel Bryan. It was a wonderful moment for him at SummerSlam. I thought the scene of Daniel Bryan main event at SummerSlam was fantastic. And the finish was, you know, it was okay with Orton coming out. The match itself, though, was great. And Bryan is a prominent figure in WWE storylines, as you mentioned, going forward. So there's no losers here. This is going to be fine, and Daniel Bryan will eventually, in my opinion, get the title back. So, to me, it was a win all the way around.
And what's interesting is we discussed this on a past episode, but this was actually the planned match for Money in the Bank in Philadelphia. The Wrestling Observer had reported that was the idea being floated around, and they decided not to go with that. But they waited till SummerSlam, which is the third biggest pay-per-view of the year, and that kind of made the moment a little bit more impactful because it happened at such a big show.
The WWE has done a good job presenting the creepy, haunting Wyatt family. However, can Bray Wyatt, Luke Harper, and Eric Rowan deliver in the ring? What do you think, Alex?
Okay, so one by one. Bray Wyatt, as some of you may know, he formerly was in World Wrestling Entertainment as Husky Harris, and he can go. He was outstanding as the Husky Harris character, not only from his promos, but from his presence, right? I mean, he's playing two distinctly different characters, and he has really good presence. But what we're seeing is that he hasn't had the opportunity to wrestle as much since he's become a manager, so he looks a little rusty. So I look for Bray Wyatt in the upcoming months to kind of get his legs back under him, and I expect big things from Bray Wyatt, as do the company, I guess. Luke Harper, I'm very familiar with Luke Harper as a talent. His name is Brody Lee in the independent wrestling scene. He made a name for himself in Northeast Indies, made a big name for himself in Chikara, had a small run in Ring of Honor. And Brody Lee is a very good professional wrestler, and I think he's going to fit right in. Now, Eric Rowan, on the other hand, He is the least experienced of the group. He was trained by Harley Race out in Missouri. And from what I've seen of him, he's got some work to do, but he can be shielded because Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper can go. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he continues his development. So that's my opinion. What are your opinion? What do you see from this group?
Well,
you're seeing a lot of them.
It's a great example, in my opinion, Alex, of just needing the right gimmick. I mean, I didn't really like Husky Harris. I didn't think that I was going to have legs and stay around. But I really like Bray Wyatt, and it is kind of creepy. I've always kind of been scared of, like, that creepy family in the woods. So I just thought it's a great example of finding the right gimmick for the right guy. I didn't love the Ring of Fire match at SummerSlam, though. Did you understand why did they do a Ring of Fire match so early? It was like the first time the Wyatt family was really featured even in a match.
Yeah, I think that had to do, websites were reporting that it had to do with the fact that Kane was going to go film a movie, which kind of makes sense because seemingly you'd want a match. They were telling a story that hadn't happened yet, right? They were telling you the story, oh, the Wyatt family interferes, but we hadn't had the match between Bray and Kane where they had interfered, right? So they were telling the story without actually showing you the story. So, yeah, in the match, you know, that wasn't the right match. Kane and Bray Wyatt, they really don't have a good rapport with each other in the ring, and the fire really limited the two guys. If you notice, they couldn't really hit the ropes.
Right.
So it was not the best display of Husky Harris or Bray Wyatt's talent. But I do expect a good future for him.
Although, you know, honestly, my 9-year-old son, that Ring of Fire match, he talks about it every day. I'm not even joking. He thought it was just so visually cool to him. So, you know, maybe we forget sometimes that this is for complete family entertainment, because my son loved it, and we may be a bit cynical. The other question I had for you, though, Alex, before we move on from this topic, is do you feel like the Shield is in a little bit of a slump, and how do they avoid that with the Wyatt family?
Now, Brian Alvarez has wrote about this in his newsletter, the Figure Four Weekly, where he's saying apparently due to some backstage conflict between Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, that apparently that's the reason we've seen a little bit of de-emphasis on them. Now, the Shield, while they're not being featured as much as what they were, they're still associated with that big angle on top with the McMahon. So there is a little bit of de-emphasis on them, I guess. There is from where they were. But, you know, it's... I say ultimately they're going to be okay because all three of them are really talented.
Yeah.
Roman Reigns needs some work in the ring, but all three of them are ultimately real talented. So how they can avoid it is, you know, they have to keep coming with interesting angles and interesting storylines. I mean, it's like Antonio Cesaro. Like, they get them started with something, and then there's nothing to follow it up with. I mean, he's been a big victim of that. So as long as they can keep finding interesting characters for the Wyatt clan to get involved with, they'll be okay. Now, when we're talking about the Ring of Fire match, do you remember the Undertaker-Kane match where Kane actually got lit on fire? That was the old finish of the match.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting that, you know, in this new era, they decided not to go that route. And, you know, it's a lot safer for the entertainers, right? Because, I mean, they're not stuntmen. So I thought it was a lot safer way to just, you know, hey, it blocks interference, whatever, you know. So I like that addition to it. Or that subtraction, I guess it would be.
Total Divas seems to be a hit on the E! Network. But now that the current wrestling programming is being impacted by the stories on that show, has the WWE gone too far? Does it seem too forced? Alex, I kind of like Total Divas. I don't love it, but I watch it. I do realize it's somewhat scripted, and that's okay, I guess. I do think that this is a smart way for the WWE to use their divas. They don't use them much on television, so, you know, the Raw programming. So why not have them on a show like E! Where they kind of come across in a reality environment? I understand this. I think it's interesting, the girls they picked. I think the Bellas are fine, and they kind of carry the show. Natalya is okay. I don't understand why the Funkadactyls are front and center in such a big part of the show. I don't find them interesting, and I don't really find JoJo and Ava Marie all that interesting either. Were you a little surprised even on the girls they picked to feature?
Okay, so I'll tell you this, is that my wife loves Trinity, and she loves, what is the, I forgot, Cameron. Yes. Cameron and, I forget their, anyway, the name thing throws me off now, but yes, my wife is very fond of both those characters. So, but, Eva Marie and JoJo, you know, they're telling the story of the new people and, whatever, you know, they're not really catching on with me because they're not really likable new people, right?
Yes.
JoJo's kind of silent and I think that, you know, she's young and I don't know. I don't really like the way JoJo's been portrayed, and Eva Marie, you know, whatever, okay? I don't really like the way that she's being portrayed either. It's not, you know,
I don't think she has a whole lot of talent.
Right. It is, you know, the way that she's being portrayed is like this girl who wants to find an in before she even gets started, right? I mean, you're talking about all these women, and even say what you will about the Bellas, for example, right? They were models, they were signed because they're twins, but, you know, they put their work in the ring, and while they may not be the best, I mean, they weren't pushed when they first came in the company, right? I mean, they had to go to developmental, and then they came up, and then they had to wait until their turn, right?
Yep.
And Eva Marie, you know, the character she kind of portrays on the show is a girl who, like, oh, I can't dance, but I'm a lie and say I can so I can get on TV with Fandango, right? So she's not really a likable new person, right? But now my problem with it is, like, for example, this is not a show I'm familiar with, but Chloe and Lamar, right? Lamar Odom is a professional basketball player, and Lamar Odom doesn't take opportunities. He hasn't played well these past couple of years, but he doesn't really take opportunities during these games to film his reality show. And I wish that the professional wrestling was kind of kept separate from the reality show, but from the reality show they pulled from the professional wrestling just to show that, yeah, these women are stars. Yes, when they walk out in front of crowds, people do cheer for them. Guys do want their autographs, but then focus a little bit more. They focus a lot on their outside life, and I like that, but I don't like how the professional wrestling is integrating the reality show, to answer your question.
Yeah, well, by the way, Tyson Kidd can't be all that pleased because he looks like he's completely disinterested in Natalya. He's not coming across in the best light here, but before we move on, I did think AJ Lee's promo this past Monday night was really, really good, and I'm not crazy about them always referring to the show, and you know, Jerry Lawler, like, passes out every time he talks about it, but AJ Lee's promo was fantastic.
I didn't like it. And about TJ Wilson real quick, I thought about this, like, there's cameras everywhere, right? I mean, you've done film work. There's cameras everywhere. There's sound guys. There's light guys. And you have Natalya, who's incredibly attractive. And what are you supposed to do, you know? I thought about it. I was like, you know, I would have to just focus on the match, too, or whatever. Because what do you, you know, it was a bad situation. Now, the AJ promo, I don't know. You know, I saw some people who really liked it, and I guess I'm in the minority, and I didn't really care for it. So I'll be interested to see where it goes. And from what I understand, some people are reporting that I guess this is, you know, going to be AJ's introduction to the show next season because it was picked up. And I don't know. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. But you know, it blurred the lines kind of, not between heel and babyface, but between reality star and professional wrestler. And I don't know. You know, it didn't really work for me personally. TNA Wrestling. Bully Ray recently defeated TNA World Champion Chris Sabin to regain the title. Did you like the title change? Or did TNA make a big mistake stripping Sabin after roughly 1 month as champion? What's interesting is that Chris Sabin had a torn ACL. He returned very shortly, maybe even for one match. Then tore his other ACL, was out one more year, and then here he comes, wins the X Division Championship, loses it, gains it back just in time to challenge Bully Ray for the title, and then after hitting Bully Ray with a hammer, was able to win the title, defends it one time against Manic, and then loses it in a rematch to Bully Ray after interference from Tito Ortiz. And it told a good story, but was the whole story necessary, I guess, in the bigger plans of TNA, David? What's your opinion?
First of all, the fact that he's torn his ACL twice and still comes back to be a professional wrestler, you have to tip your cap to that. I've torn my ACL. I've had the reconstructive knee surgery. I'm always amazed, Alex, by the resilience of professional athletes to overcome injuries. So I like Chris Sabin for, if no other reason, that he has shown, to me, kind of a hero quality. Those are serious, serious injuries. I'm also a little bit old school in that I don't like frequent title changes. I like to feel like that's a big moment when, especially the TNA World Heavyweight Championship, changes hands. When he won it, I was a little bit invigorated into the product again. So I kind of thought that was a cool change that Chris Sabin was the champion. I was just disappointed it ended so soon. How about you?
You know, I understand the story, and you know, it's interesting. I didn't know you had torn your ACL, but I think that people can understand that, right? Because we've seen this injury take out professional basketball players, professional football players. So we kind of understand the struggle of what it takes for someone to come back from such an injury, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it was a little bit, and my only problem with it, I guess, is because of the way his X Division title reign was challenged. It was handled. If we compare it last year to how Austin Aries' title reign was handled, Austin Aries was seen as the number two guy in the company next to the world champion. So when he challenged Bobby Roode, that was the natural matchup, and no one else really made sense at the time. Chris Sabin, though, he had just won it back after losing it to Austin Aries. So, a little bit better storytelling would have made me a little bit more interested in the matchup. The Huntington Beach Bad Boy, Tito Ortiz, showed up on recent weeks of TNA Impact to face off with Quentin Rampage Jackson. Are the lines between MMA and pro wrestling becoming too blurred for you, David?
I talked about this with my neighbor tonight. He's a huge MMA fan, specifically, of course, UFC. And, you know, he was surprisingly, in my opinion, Alex, kind of just shrugged his shoulders at the whole thing. You know, I guess, you know, boxing and MMA and pro wrestling, it's entertainment to a certain degree. There's a certain amount of circus around all of it. But to me, it is becoming a little too blurred. His point was, well, guys like Tito Ortiz, you know, their best days are behind them. So this is another way to earn a paycheck and what the hell. But I think it's a little too blurred for me. I don't really like it because, quote-unquote, UFC, MMA, that's real competition, and now they're crossing into entertainment and still being kind of that tough guy. So for me, it is a little bit. How about you?
Okay, so where do I begin? I have a lot to say about this. So,
sure you do.
In December, I talked to Muhammad Lawal, who was the first person who was supposed to be part of this experiment to incorporate professional wrestling and mixed martial arts. Muhammad Lawal had been released from UFC after a little stint he had with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. So Muhammad Lawal, I talked to him in December, and he was enjoying professional wrestling training. I spoke to Dave Meltzer in July, and Dave Meltzer told me that Muhammad Lawal, when he's not training for a fight, he's training in Vegas right now. Also, so does TNA wrestler Kenny King. So I guess he trains with Kenny King in professional wrestling. So I say all that to say this, is that Muhammad Lawal really enjoys professional wrestling. He enjoys doing it, and he's wrestling and training in Ohio Valley as well. And, you know, it may be a detriment to his fight career, but he's really fallen in love with pro wrestling. Quentin Jackson and Tito Ortiz, on the other hand, they have no ambition to train in professional wrestling. Tito Ortiz, I was on a conference call with Bellator maybe a month ago. Tito Ortiz was on the call and actually told Dave Meltzer he had just 3 months ago had ACL surgery, reconstructive surgery. So he has no ambition. And also, you know, he's been very honest about it. He's had numerous back surgeries, neck fusion surgery. He has no ambition at this age to become a professional wrestler. And it shows when they're out there, because him and Quentin are terrible when they're out there. And it's very unfortunate that they have a bigger name and they're being pushed out there. But Muhammad Lawal, who is a developing talent in mixed martial arts, really enjoys professional wrestling. And I think that we would have gotten more traction if we would have seen Muhammad Lawal out there, because he enjoys it a lot more. And what's also interesting is I had the opportunity to talk to Dixie during a conference call. And Dixie, when I asked her about it, because I feel like when you bring in the MMA fighters, this happened in New Japan Pro Wrestling. MMA took off in Japan, and New Japan brought in all the MMA guys, and they beat the pro wrestlers. And then in MMA fights, the MMA guys would beat the pro wrestlers. But the MMA, and it just made the pro wrestler guys look stupid. And then the pro wrestling guys couldn't draw anymore. And so it brought a lot of undue criticism to pro wrestling. And so I asked Dixie, was that a concern of hers? And she was like, no, it worked in Japan. What she was referencing is it worked for the MMA group. Because, yeah, they could draw big houses by having the MMA guy go against the pro wrestling guy. But what she didn't mention is that it did damage the New Japan Pro Wrestling, which they're just now recovering from. So it's I don't like it. I don't think they look very good out there. They don't want to be pro wrestlers. They don't want to put the time in and learn the craft. So I'm not real big about them being displayed out there as regularly as they are. I think one-offs, for example, there's famous Muhammad Ali getting into it with Gorilla Monsoon. You know, one-offs, that's fine. But every week, not a big fan of it. And if you're going to choose someone like Muhammad Lawal who actually likes it. That's my opinion. The past 2 weeks, TNA has been running pay-per-view-themed television shows. Hardcore Justice featured some good action. Does this seem like a good business move? Now, what's interesting is that the ratings for these pay-per-view on television shows have actually gone up. So they are able to garner interest for these shows. Now, the business, per se, how much money they're losing, vice gaining, is not the discussion I want to have. But from a fan interest standpoint, are you a little bit more interested when TNA presents it? It kind of harkens back a little bit to Saturday Night's Main Event for me. Well, what's your opinion, David?
Well, it does to me, because you're right. It seems special, but I would argue, Alex, that when it's in the normal time slot, it doesn't feel special. And I don't really care whether it's called Hardcore Justice or TNA Impact, but what I think the disservice here is that it cheapens Impact a little bit, I think. Because then when tonight we're recording on a Thursday, it's a quote-unquote normal Impact. It felt a little bit like a letdown. So I don't mind these special presentations. I wouldn't do them, though, in the same time slot. Does that make sense?
Yes. Now, because you believe that you're not going to be as interested in Impact because...
No, let me be clear. Because I think that a big part of pro wrestling is generating interest and excitement. And I think if people are going to tune in anyway at the normal time of Impact, that what's the difference if it's Hardcore Justice or if it's Impact? They're tuning in to watch TNA. I think that it's more impactful and more important to the company if you have a special, even if it's on free television.
So would you have rather them put these specials on, for example, a Saturday night? Would that gain more interest for you?
Well, yeah. In fact, you talk about Saturday night's main event, which is one of my all-time favorite memories of my entire life, because I love Saturday Night Live, but I used to love when it was preempted at 11:30 for, you know, of course, Saturday night's main event, because it was different. It wasn't Saturday morning at 11 a.m. It wasn't Sunday morning. It was, oh my God, I get to stay up late and watch this show. So to me, that was a critical part of it, that it was on a different time.
Now, what are your thoughts now? Okay, I understand exactly what you're saying. So now, when it comes to the presentation of the show, how you have matches that have been built to vice matches made the week prior. Now, what are your thoughts on the presentation of the shows, disregarding the time and location of the show?
Yeah, I thought the presentation was fine. Part of the problem is now, of course, everything's on the internet, and if you want to read about the results, you know, before you watch the program, you can. But I thought the shows themselves were fine. I just, in general, don't like having TNA Impact kind of replaced by this type. I don't know. What do you feel about that? Because to me, I think TNA should stick with a Thursday night show and do these kind of special programs to raise interest.
And I don't know what the deal with Spike TV is, but you know, I honestly like it because it gets you in the habit of watching the shows every Thursday, and then every couple of months, I mean, every once a month, it kind of feels like a treat, like you're presented this special one-off show, and it's kind of like a treat for a wrestling fan, right? Because, I mean, this is the same quality of show that they would have presented on pay-per-view just last year. So, it's you know, I actually enjoy the concept, and I like it. I wish World Wrestling Entertainment would move, you know, to where maybe every couple of months they presented like a special show like this. Because even when we get like a special Raw or special SmackDown, they kind of still don't give you the finishes, right? They kind of still have the television finishes with the run-ins. And, you know, I would like WWE maybe to incorporate something like this in the future.
You got me all jazzed up, by the way, talking about Saturday night's main event.
You know, there's a couple of really good WWE DVD releases in the future, and one I'm really, really excited for, and they have the poster on Raw every week, is the Mid-South compilation.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, man, I'm super excited about that. Some 80s Mid-South with Terry Gordy and Junkyard Dog, and, oh, man, I'm Ted DiBiase, absolutely. Paul Orndorff. I mean, I'm super excited about that set coming out. And, you know, there's a lot to like about the current professional wrestling. You know, New Japan just had the G1 Climax a lot of people are talking about. But, you know, the old days, the nostalgia stuff that I grew up with and the stuff before my era, I mean, it's still wonderful to go back and watch that.
Wild card topic number one. I read that Mick Foley is, quote, a little disappointed, unquote, that the WWE hasn't embraced his comedy routine yet. Alex, does Mick Foley have a right to be disappointed by this?
I actually haven't read that, but if Foley is disappointed with that, I mean, I could kind of, the company is kind of controlling of your outside work. And I think a lot of guys get upset because this is the opportunity where they can make the most money, right? I mean, if we remember to the 2000s era when the women were doing Playboy, the wrestlers were hosting Saturday Night Live and making appearances. I mean, a lot of guys were doing a lot more things. Foley was writing books. All this stuff, by the way, was pushed on World Wrestling Entertainment Television. And the guys were able to make a lot more money on their own. But WWE is kind of constricted on that. So I can see from a talent standpoint, especially when you're not featured every week on television, and Foley, due to the multiple concussions that he's had, is not allowed to go back in the ring. So I could see him being frustrated, you know, like, hey, I have this outlet, and I'm employed with the company, but the company won't endorse it.
I don't know. What if he's not what if he's not funny? I mean, he's not Milton Berle. He's not Johnny Carson. I don't know. I don't know if I was a WWE, if I'd endorse him either.
You know, Garrett Gonzalez, who we had as a co-host a few weeks ago, he actually saw his comedy show in San Francisco, and I'll have to ask him what he thought about it. I know it was a lot of professional wrestling stories, but I didn't get a full review from him, so I'll have to ask him. But I know it's a ton of professional wrestling stories. So, and Foley has always been an entertaining talker. So I can see the interest in that, right? I mean, if he's not saying, you know, bada bing, bada boom, bam, you know, comedy. If he's telling, you know, professional wrestling stories that have funny endings, right? I can see the interest in that from a professional wrestling standpoint.
Yeah, I think that if he was performing down the street, we'd go, we'd have a good time. But should Vince put his stamp of approval on the WWE logo on it? I don't know. I think they've done a lot for him. I think, you know, they have certainly included him in programming over the years. And stand-up comedy, even for guys like Jerry Seinfeld and Jay Leno, it's tough business, man. And Mick Foley is quote-unquote a stand-up comedian, and we're all supposed to jump on board with that. I think it's a little goofy.
You know what's interesting is that I hear Mick Foley interviews, and sometimes he is a lot more enduring character on the television than he is during interviews. Sometimes I don't really care for his interviews that much. He kind of comes across as someone who maybe thinks his place in professional wrestling was, you know, he was on top during a big era, but sometimes I feel like he feels he was a lot bigger superstar than maybe I feel like he was, you know. I don't know. He did it, you know. Good for him.
It was really great recording with you tonight. By the way, do you mind if I get something off my chest before we finish this show here?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's pretty funny how so many people are outraged by how Miley Cyrus behaved at the recent MTV Video Music Awards, her performance, you know, with Robin Thicke. And I don't know. I mean, sex and music has always gone hand in hand. And I mean, we know these stars go through these crazy ups and downs. I just didn't think it was that big a deal. I mean, I grew up in the 80s. I'm a huge Madonna fan. I still think she's the first, she's the best, she's the true superstar. Everyone from Lady Gaga to Britney Spears to Miley Cyrus is literally just doing, in my opinion, a poor Madonna impression. I thought Miley was fine. I don't love that song, but who cares? It's just amazing to me that we spend so much time and energy. Everyone with a Twitter account and a Facebook, they go on and just, you can't get enough about criticizing Miley Cyrus. Are we kind of overreacting here?
She went to Europe, right, to kind of, like, get this new image. I mean, it's like she did the Hannah Montana show, whatever. She started a music career, but I don't remember her really doing anything in America until now. She's had this kind of big resurgence in America, and she's come with this new image. And it makes sense, right? Like, one of my coworkers told me at work, like, oh, I read online that a parent said, you know, I can't let my child watch Hannah Montana anymore. And guess what? She's already cashed all those Hannah Montana checks, right? And there'll be more checks coming, and you know, she's creating a new image for herself. And while you got to take it kind of far left to bring it back to the center, we've seen this throughout the years with someone like Madonna. But this is something that frustrates me about social media, is that water cooler talks used to be independent of work, right? So my workplace had a different water cooler talk than your workplace, and then whenever we chatted as friends, we could have different discussions. But now with social media, it kind of, we're all having the same conversation all over the world. It's kind of frustrating because I didn't feel like the Miley thing was even that bothersome, so I would have rather talked about this year. I felt like the MTV Video Awards kind of knocked it out of the park with the performances they had. I thought that was very good selection of the artists they had, a very eclectic mix, good performances from everyone. And secondly, the no host concept, really daring, and I thought it worked very well. And those weren't conversations we were having, David, because social media didn't want to talk about that. And that's the thing that frustrates me.
That's a good rant. Wow, you kind of tag-teamed onto mine. I made the hot tag there.
Yeah, in a way, I guess we did.
Well, and just to finish that subject, you're exactly right. About, and maybe all my friends were nuts when I was growing up, but I didn't know it because no one was on Twitter every day. Right? Now I know all my friends are crazy because they're on Facebook taking pictures of what they're eating for lunch. And I agree with you. I thought the MTV show was really, really good and kind of captured, in my opinion, Alex, what music means today to society. It, you know, it's always been about sex, drugs, and rock and roll and music, if we're being honest all the way back. And now, you know, MTV just presented a very racy, edgy show. I didn't see what was such a big deal.
You know, it's interesting that, like, the no-host concept, right? It's daring, but really the host, even hosts that I like, they kind of get to a point to where it's like, okay, I've seen enough of you, I want to carry on with the show. And they kind of seem forced in some spots, and, you know, they're more there, I think, to give the production crew maybe a rest, you know, as they set up for some of these performances. But the MTV Awards, they handled it very well. It came across very smooth, in my opinion. And I liked it. I didn't get tired of one particular person. You know, I very, very much enjoyed the concept. And, yeah, the musical artists from Kanye West, the Robin Thicke, the 2 Chainz, a lot of the biggest names of this era, Justin Timberlake, man, you know, you want to talk about making someone important. I mean, they certainly made Justin Timberlake feel like he, and this guy was a boy band artist, right? I mean, think of one of the kids from One Direction. And they made Justin Timberlake, and Justin Timberlake, for all intents and purposes, is, right? I mean, he is one of the biggest acts today, and they really let you know that. And up and down, great show. Really enjoyed it. First one I've enjoyed very thoroughly in years and years. I greatly enjoyed this year's MTV Music Awards.
Well, this is a spirited edition of the radio show tonight. You know, it's funny. I remember saying, I mean, honestly, I remember saying it to my wife when Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake broke up. I remember saying to her, "That's the worst thing ever happened to him."
You know, with him and Kevin Federline, it seems like the way to go is to break up with her, right? I mean, you get a lot more of a rebound after that.
Well, if I wasn't married, I would be raising my hand. I wouldn't mind breaking up with her after a few months. Should I edit that out? Is that too racy? Am I the Miley Cyrus of this show, Alex?
We'll find out on social media, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, well, don't forget to check out the OWW website at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. Alex, what's your Twitter again?
AlexScoff84, same as Facebook.
Very good. I'm DLB19338. Too many numbers for Alex, but DLB19338. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, I am David.
And this is Alex.
And we hope you enjoyed the program. We'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.
All right, well, that's okay.